You are listening to the Leukamania Pop Culture Podcast. Is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase your favorite trade paperbacks and hardcovers for up to 45% off cover price.
How's it going, everybody? You're listening to Leukamania. This is a very special episode, actually. This is not your typical episode of Leukamania, because today we're kind of commenting on what's going on, you know, kind of talking about current events going on in the comics biz, and how it's really, I find it really disturbing. And joining me today is... He is a man of many talents. He is a writer. He is a hype man. He's a very creative person who does a lot of stuff, including, you know, running, you know, like a publishing imprint all on his own. He is Mr. Sean Pryor, a.k.a. Mr. Stan Leroy. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Hey, Pat. Thanks for the intro, man. I really appreciate it. You know, I've never been called hype man before. Now I feel like the days of MC Hammer when he had two big MC always yelling and having his back every 5 seconds. I kind of like that.
Well, it's kind of true, because you are very... You're very, very prolific online. You do a really good job presenting, you know, the PKD books and the podcast and all that stuff. I think you do a really good job getting your name out there, and you know, it's a very important thing to have if you're in the comics biz, especially if you're doing creator owned work.
Yeah. That is so true. Oh, sorry, but go ahead.
No. Anyway, I brought you on because we were having, you know, there was about a week ago. You're listening to this. It's Friday. And a week ago, exactly, there have been some layoffs, you know, from a certain publisher. You know, one of the most profitable companies out there, and they're laying off people for cost-cutting measures. And I find it very disturbing. And of course, if you're a comics person, you know what we're talking about. We're talking about Marvel here. They laid off a bunch of people from editorial, really good people too, am I not? And a lot of people from from production. Mm-hmm. And then, well, a few weeks before that, they laid off the COO, Jim Sokolowski, was laid off, and he's been there forever.
Yes.
And it's, you know, and in addition to that, several titles have been canceled. You know, they upgraded Alpha Flight into an ongoing series, only to cancel it right at the end of issue 8, which is, you know, it becomes an ongoing after that, supposedly. Mm-hmm. They canceled that. They canceled Iron Man 2.0. They canceled Herc. It's saddening. It doesn't really make you hopeful for the comics business, because here it is. You know, Marvel has like the big media presence. They have the movies. Everything's going Marvel. You know, everything's going good for Marvel. And then they're laying people off to cut on costs.
Right. Yeah. It all reeks. It just really reeks, because it's just odd, especially for the fact that they've been pretty much between Marvel and DC over the years. You know, Marvel's been the heavy hitter. Okay. Yeah. Let's keep it real. They were constantly winning the game for like the longest time. And I apologize if the phone's ringing.
That's pretty fun.
It's you know, political season right now, and like these telemarketers are just like going berserk. But you know, they've been pretty much have had the ball in their court for the longest time, and DC couldn't really do anything about it. And I know some people think that, okay, well, after the DC 52 came in, shook up things a bit. You know, and then like compared to Marvel numbers, Marvel got scared, and these people got laid off as a response from that. And that's not the case at all. You know, Marvel is still doing well, and it's not like Marvel Comics. Mm-hmm. It's not like Marvel Comics is a big company. It's not. It honestly is not. It is, compared to other publishers, Marvel is small. You know, when you have one HR person. Normally you're pretty small. I mean, you know, normally like your bigger publishers or your bigger companies have HRs for each division. Mm-hmm. And so like in the case with Marvel, them only having one HR person, to me that shows that they're kind of small, and it's very insular. And I just don't understand the fact that all these cost cutting measures to let all these people go. And certain books, I understand, like a book like All Winter Squad, I can understand if like something like that gets canceled. I can understand if like a book here or there gets canceled, but you know, Herc numbers were all right. You know, we're in an age of comics now where if a title sells 20,000 copies, you're doing okay. Yeah, it's long from the line of 200,000, 500,000, a million, 2 million. But if you sell 20,000 copies of a comic book, you're doing all right. And to see books of that caliber, you know, of that type of selling quality get cut, that's a problem for me. You know, and to see good people lose their jobs in a situation where financially and fiscally they're not, you know, and granted, we don't know all the numbers, mind you. We That's don't right. know all the numbers and we don't know all the facts, but looking from the outside in, there's nothing to make, you know, me think or say that, okay, these people are hemorrhaging money. We got to make cuts now. So it's very disturbing because it's kind of like a knee jerk reaction.
Yeah,
because go ahead.
I was going to say also, I mean, they've been doing all kinds of cost cutting. I mean, I've been hearing of talk of, you know, there's like an A rate and B rate for freelancers, and you know, and there's all this talk about just cutting in like the weirdest places. And then, you know, then there's also the thing that a lot of people are starting to notice or talk about is the lessened page counts in some of the books.
Yeah,
and I'll be honest here. I don't really care about the page counts. That's, you know, to me, as long as it's an entertaining story, it's worth the money, whatever $2 or $3 or $4 that I spend on it. But mm-hmm. the thing is, you start to look at everything as a whole now, cutting people, cutting rates, cutting pages. That just makes no sense. It's just pure greed.
Oh yeah,
and it's not even in Marvel Publishing proper. I mean, those guys are probably bearing the brunt of all this blame. You know, those poor guys are working their asses off. I mean, during New York Comic Con, I know of some editors who are, you know, over the weekend who were still working and they're making sure the books got put out in time before they even attended the con, mm-hmm. and that's right there at their home base. So you know, it's not on them. They're just trying to make the best out of their situation.
But yeah,
it sucks that, you know, this is happening, all of this all at once. And I don't know if I love Marvel. You know, I mean, I grew up reading that stuff, and I've come to know a lot of the creators and a lot of the people involved in the creation of these books, and have so much respect for these people. I'm getting really worried that someone might just, you know, lose their gig or do what, or you know, or stuff might just happen because people are just all about maximizing their profits and not caring at all about the people or the the art in this mm-hmm. thing. You know,
well, it also makes you wonder a couple other things too, like. You know, in business, in any business, there are normally risks that need to be taken.
That's right.
You know, high risk, high reward. Or if you decide to just go low key mm-hmm. and say, okay, if we stay low key and just do X, we're going to earn X. And if that keeps us all right, fine, we can go ahead and do that too. But in publishing, there's always a risk and reward in publishing. And yes, I know we're making a conversion from print to digital, but people still buy print and people are still trying to understand the digital game. So, but... I guess, like, the thing for me that, like, I get concerned about now with all this, because it comes off like micromanaging.
Yes, it is. That's exactly what it is.
And, you know, it comes off like micromanaging, and it just doesn't make sense to me. And it also makes me wonder when Joe Q was running, you know, when Joe Q was the EIC at Marvel, I'm sure he had to deal with a gentleman by the name of Isaac Perlmutter.
Yes.
And, you know, because, like, according to articles and things like that, Perlmutter is one of the main reasons why we have the situation at Marvel right now. Perlmutter still runs Marvel, even though he got over $1 billion or has $1 billion from the Disney buyout of Marvel. Mm-hmm. And even though he got that money, he's still allowed to run Marvel. And so... You know, for him, you know, it, for him, the way it pretty much works, and once again, this is just all by articles, like things like from Comics Beat, you know, rumor mill sites like Bleeding Cool and all that stuff. So you take this kind of stuff, you just take it, you know, with a grain of salt. But he's in a situation where a lot of people have said, a lot of people have said that Marvel's pretty much left on their own. Disney does not mess with them as long as the numbers are okay. And I think it's a situation where the numbers were still great compared to other publishers. I mean, look, I run Action Lab. I help run Action Lab Entertainment. We're a small publisher. We're in the direct market. If we had a fifth, heck, if we had even the smallest percentage of what Marvel was making, we would be doing backflips right now. I mean, we would be partying right now. But you know, I'm not, you know, I'm thinking that he's looking at the numbers and saying, okay, we could take a small little drop right now because we're not, we might not be able to hit what we hit last year. You know what? Let's just streamline this and cut this and cut this down. And really talented people lost jobs. And it also makes me wonder, because of this man, and I'm not saying that he's the be all end all, as to the reason why Marvel had these sudden changes and shook things up. But it makes me wonder if he's also the reason why Marvel has been in this state of, I need an event every 6 months and then bridge it with an event that technically isn't an event, but it is an event followed by another event. And it's because it keeps going from event to event to event to event to event. And there really isn't a conclusion. It's a, we're floating you here to float you here. We're floating you here to float you here. And that has a lot to do with the fact that those books sold for the longest time. Now it's starting to peter out a bit. But if Mr. Perlmutter looked at that type of flow as far as the way the books were going, he's like, okay, if this worked, keep doing that. And so at the time, Joe Q and everybody else just had to work around that, and hopefully everything will be okay. But I'm concerned. I'm concerned. I mean, I know we all had our doubts when Disney bought Marvel. You know, a lot of people were real negative on it. It's like, okay, this is probably going to be the end of Marvel. It's just going to be an IP farm. And by IP, we mean intellectual property. Intellectual property farm. The books won't matter anymore. And Marvel's pretty much done. Now, they're not done. But when you do stuff like this and try to do all this cost-cutting stuff to a company that's still very profitable, I get, like I said, once again, I get concerned.
Oh, yeah. And much like you, I feel the same way. It's you can't have any confidence, you know, if you start hearing things like this. I mean, you know, like the caliber of the people that they let go. I mean, Jody LeHoop, who is the editor of Uncanny X-Force, got let go, and he has been the guy who pretty much he's the guy who puts together the book that is pretty much the most beloved book at the publisher right now. I mean, anyone you talk to who reads Uncanny X-Force tell you how much they love that book, and it's because of that guy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, granted, of course, you don't want to shortchange Rick Remender or Dean White and the artists that work on the book, like, you know, like Jerome Pena and Mark Brooks and all those guys. You don't want to shortchange them. But without Jody, that book would not be running as well as it has been running. And how could you let someone like that go? You know, that guy's a commodity. They invented. They should promote the guy.
You know? Yeah. Oh,
And I mean, editorial. And then of course we have Alejandro Arbona who. He does a lot of the he does stuff with Stephen Wacker, he does some of the Spidey books. He did Iron Fist, and that's among the other things, like, you know, that's some of Nick Spencer's books he handles also. And that dude is also a really good editor. He has not put out a bad book in his entire tenure working for that company, and then he got let go. I mean, it's just so weird. And of course, they're fairly new as well, which makes it even more sad, because why would you get encouraged to try and get a job there? Or why would anyone want to try and get a job there if they target you as the first to go when things like this happens?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And you know, the thing is, maybe the writing had been on the wall for a long time, because if you look at it, when, like, some people had either walked away or were let go earlier, like, say, for instance, a gentleman like Nate Cosby.
Yes.
You know, he stepped away from Marvel, and from what I know, his position was never replaced. And so from there you have, okay, well, Nate used to do this job, so let's get, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so just to take up, you know, what he was doing here. Once again, I don't know this for fact. I'm pretty much just assuming,
It's a speculation.
It's all speculation. That is not fact, But what it really comes down to also with these additional layoffs, there are going to be people that are going to have to do the jobs of two to three people now, mm-hmm. or split the jobs up between other people. And that makes other people's jobs harder to do. And publishing books alone is not an easy task. Let's keep it real. It's not. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you've helped publish a comic. You know, you've done art for comics. You know, you're an artist. You're a writer. You know the process.
I mean, I'm self-published as well.
And
this is not an easy thing to do. Just assembling the books, making sure the files are straight, keeping everyone on task for deadlines. There are so many things involved in the creation of a book, and you have to really learn to respect and understand you know, how much work is involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
And it you know, and just imagine all, I mean, the number of books that Marvel publishes in any given month, and you imagine the number of staffers that actually have to take care of this.
Yes.
I bet you there's at least, like, one assistant editor probably has like 5 books on their plate at any given time. Mm-hmm. You have to juggle all those freelancers and all that talent, and then coordinating with other editors about characters they could use. That is just a really hard job.
Oh, yeah.
And it sucks that, you know, you do all this work, you know, you have a good weekend in New York, you know, and all of a sudden you come back to work, oh, you're fired. It's like, what?
Yeah.
You know?
It's
awful.
Right, and it really comes off like, you know, with these cuts, it really comes off like it's just that there isn't technically there really isn't a plan for the future. That's the way it looks to me. Yeah, I know they have, and Marvel has that new event coming out next year, you know, that might be a soft reboot. But although Marvel has done plenty of soft reboots over the years, but nobody calls them soft reboots. But the whole thing about it is that if you know, whoever, you know, if Isaac Perlmutter doesn't have a plan for the future of Marvel, you know, just besides, like, you know, number crunching and, you know, getting rid of people and having people do the jobs and more. Sorry, I'm all tongue-tied. Well, I'm frustrated. You know, of doing the jobs of more than one person without a plan for what is the future of Marvel Comics, you know, it's nothing good can come from that. You know, I wish Marvel nothing but the best, but when you read these articles, whether they all be true or not, it makes me concerned.
Yeah, it gets you thinking, at least. You may think of Marvel as this, but, you know, it's like those are little chinks in the armor, you know? You just poke at it and prod at it, and then eventually something comes up, and you just can't help but be worried about what's going on. Because, like it or not, I mean, these guys, they need to be healthy. This, you know, because they're integral for the business to stay healthy as well, you know?
Well, yeah, definitely.
I mean, everyone kind of supports each other in one way, because they, you know, they bring new talent out, new talent goes out to create their own thing later on. You know, mm-hmm. it kind of, it's a cycle, you know?
Yes.
And it sucks that, you know, the whole, I mean, we all know, you know, what they say about, you know, about art and commerce, you know, art and business, and how when they mix, you know, it can be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And this, we're starting to see that here, because, you know, at least from what we know, at least the creatives over at Marvel, they're all excited. They're just all about doing the work and getting, you know, getting stuff out there. And then you got these guys, you know, putting the extra pressure on them with numbers, and that kind of, you know, that could affect the way they perform and do their own work. You know?
Right, exactly. And the thing is that we can't always constantly look at the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
We also have to take into consideration, and I'm talking about this from, like, you know, a head honcho standpoint. Uh-huh. You can't constantly look at the numbers when you are part of something that is honestly not a necessity in your life.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this is entertainment. This is flat-out entertainment. When the economy is great, guess what? We spend extra money on all types of things that we honestly don't need. There's a difference between a need and a want. And the thing is that, you know, a comic book is a want and not a need. I need to eat. So you need to eat, and you need to sleep, and you need to be able to pay your rent or pay your mortgage and pay your bills. That's a need. I want a comic book. I want a comic book because that's a form of entertainment that I enjoy. And the thing is that sometimes when the economy gets rough, you know, entertainment is like one of the first things to normally suffer. You know, so comic book sales suffer and comic book stores suffer. And, you know, not only that, but, you know, we've lost a lot of comic book stores over the last decade and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes the numbers. You know, our distribution methods have changed over the years. And that has also damaged the industry in some ways, too. You know, we went from an era of where we had like six to seven distributors, and a smaller publisher could sell 60,000 copies of a comic through several distributors and be well off. And now, you know, that's not the case anymore.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not the case anymore. The market's changed and the market has shrunk. And because it's shrunk, you can't expect a retailer to constantly bend over every single month and pick up every single Marvel book. A lot of them did it with the DC thing because it was a big deal. You know, it was a company-wide relaunch. And, you know,
and DC, that's to be honest, also DC offered them a lot of incentive to order up, you know, because, you know, they made books returnable. They were doing all kinds of things to entice people to order, because a lot of retailers are scared to do, to put in such a big risk, you know, such an investment on something that, that, let's be honest, may or may not succeed. And thankfully for everyone, it succeeded.
Yeah, yes. It's definitely succeeding right now. But see, here's a whole other key component to that, too. There is a synergy between DC Entertainment mm-hmm. and Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a synergy there. Okay, because they put out commercials. Warner Brothers is massively behind this, and so like they're working together not just from a movie, just from a movie perspective, but from a comics perspective. No, you know, DC Comics isn't that company that's just that offshoot of Warner Brothers that's like over in the corner, like the bastard child that we check on every now and then. It's a whole different game. Once Marvel started making money with their movies, Warner Brothers is like, why the hell can't we do that? and that's when, you know, that's when it slowly started to change. And so now they realize that they have something on their hands besides an IP farm. And so now with this relaunch, especially like because DC technically in the battle between Marvel had been struggling. So that's you do this whole big relaunch. Warner Brothers is behind you. You're building up this synergy. And you're hoping for the best, and right now it's been good. And that's what always surprised me about the whole Disney-Marvel thing. I know Disney owns a lot of stuff, okay? They own tons of stuff, whether it be ESPN, ABC, you know, you name it. They own stuff. You know, they have their own publishing company, which is huge. They have record labels. I mean, you name it. If you looked at the Disney corporate family tree, I mean, it is, I'm talking like, it's bigger than like, you know, mob families. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's fucking huge. But at the same time, a lot of these companies in between, you know, the Disney ownership have that synergy. And the one thing I thought that would happen would be a synergy between Disney and Marvel. From the fact of that overseas, Disney comics are a big deal. Okay? Mm-hmm. They're a very big deal. So much of a big deal, like it said in the Comics Beat article, Nachi Castro, Mike Siglane, Jane Asselin, and Jan Jones Robinson, they help with the Disney comics that sell overseas, but for some reason aren't even, you know, found in the States. The only time that you could find Disney comics in the States was when Boom had them. And then when the contract, you know, reverted, you know, when the rights went back to ownership rights, you know, Disney took them back. And then we thought, okay, that means Marvel's going to do these books now. And Quesada said a few months ago, that's not in the plans. You know, I don't know how much rank he had to say that, but he just said that, you know, there's nothing in the plans for that right now, which hurt me because I thought they were great books for kids and, you know, kids at heart. But there's no synergy between Disney and Marvel. It really comes off once again like a numbers game. And Perlmutter's like, I got to make sure that this company makes X amount of dollars per year. Technically, you know, Perlmutter's Disney's, you know, largest shareholder now that Steve Jobs has passed away. And, you know, and he wants to be the man that has the highest profit margin of any company that's owned by Disney. So to do that, this is what he's doing. But in the end, in the long run, it could really hurt him. It could really hurt him. And I wish the industry was in a different state to where it used to be years ago. You know, if a guy or a gal left Marvel or left DC, you know, you kind of had that like war between companies trying to grab the talent.
Oh, yeah. Everyone was trying to sign people to exclusives.
Right.
And now it's very low key when they do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because, you know, the game's changed, the economic market's changed, and, you know, I'm hoping that these people that have been laid off get work because they deserve, you know, they work their butts off. And I hope that they can find work. It's just that the market itself has changed so much. You know, we have a lot of publishers still, but the money's not there.
Yep. And there's so many factors involved why that money isn't there. I mean, it's just, you know, besides the fact that books have, you know, and I never really made an issue out of comics pricing, but, you know, a lot of books are really expensive these days.
Yeah.
And then there's, of course, you know, there's of course, people trying to make up for that. And there are people pirating. Everything is going on all at the same time, and it's not painting a good picture of the biz. And you know, I've avoided talking about, you know, this aspect of the industry because, you know, I like to focus on what's going on in the books and the content. But just all this stuff happening right now, it's kind of overwhelming. It's really disappointing and really saddening.
Yeah, and the thing is that, you know, it could have been to where stuff like this had been happening all the time. It's just that we live in a new era where secrets are spilled, and whether, you know, whether these secrets are true or false, we have more information to what's behind the scenes now than ever before.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The internet, you know, has really changed the way this industry is running.
Right.
To be honest.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. I mean, like, you know, outside of, like, you know, podcasting and all these comic book blogs, and even creators with their own blogs are, like, saying stuff on Twitter or social media. We know so much, and, like, sometimes that affects us in how we read a book. But all this information is just out there now, and stuff like this could have been happening a long time ago too. It's just that we didn't know about it because the people that were running these companies, like, say for instance, when Joe Q was EIC or Marvel, he's like, listen, I'll do all I can to make sure that Perlmutter stays off our back and we're good. And the thing is that I understand why Perlmutter is doing this. I still say it's bad form. Yeah, I say it's really bad form. But also have to look at it like this. He came in with AV Aired when they were running a Toy Biz.
Yeah, Avi Arad. Yeah, they came in together, and they literally. I mean, let's give the devil his due. You know, they did save the company from completely going under during the bankruptcy.
Yeah,
and they saved it. But you know, well, we already know. I'm not going to repeat everything I just said. Yeah. We all know where they took it from there.
Right.
And what's going on now?
Oh, no, exactly. And you know, so, like, I'll give them props for that. But at the same time, you just doing, like I said, doing this is just, I think, that's just a bad look, especially in a state where you really don't need to do that if your profit margins are still strong and profitable, especially, like, when you're coming out with some books that are $3.99 that only have 19 pages of story. I'm not talking about the ads. I'm just talking story.
Yeah.
That is a problem for me. Once again, being a small, you know, being a publisher in the direct market, like, we have to charge $3.99 for our books, but our books could have anywhere between, you know, 24 to 28, and I think even one time 32 pages worth of story. And, you know, and, like, there are no ads in there because, you know, we're still learning the game to how to get, you know, advertising. So, you know, you're getting a full book, and you would have got a full book regardless if we had ads in it or not. And I feel bad because we're charging $3.99 for a book, but we have to do that because of cost. You know, the cost to print a book, the cost to manufacture a book, you know, quantity, and all these other types of things. And I feel bad about that, but that's what we have to do. But when I see a Marvel comic with 19 pages for $3.99 and a ton of ads, then I get upset because then there are probably people that are probably thinking that even smaller publishers are trying to rip off readers when that's not the case.
I can understand where you're coming from, but, you know, it's difficult to kind of talk about because, you know, we're not fully informed of everything that goes on. And, you know, there was that one... There's that one instance where I think it was a stockholders meeting or something where they a mutual friend of ours, Jason Wood, had asked like a Marvel exec about the $3.99 pricing thing, and then it basically they started doing that pricing just to test, you know, if people would actually buy them, and people did.
Yeah.
And maybe we are partly to blame for the prices going up because I honestly did not care about pricing. You know, that's just what I am, how I am. Right. I just want to read the books. But if it's gotten to that point where they're getting that, and then they're doing all this other stuff, like, I mean, I have no problem putting $3.99 for, you know, paying $3.99 for a comic book if it's maybe 19 pages or whatever. But don't be fucking firing your people who are like working their asses off.
Yes.
And you know, don't do that because now I feel like okay, nothing. I'm spending this money and it doesn't make, you know, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't do anything for the company what I'm spending. No, I don't like that feeling. It's really pissing me off, and it's you know, I'm glad like some of those editors are already starting to find gigs, which is cool. You know, but still, it's fucking bullshit that those guys got fired.
Yeah,
it just irritates me as a creative person, as someone who knows, you know, and you and me, we both know everything. You know, we both know how to do those jobs. It just bothers me, and I honestly am incensed over the whole thing, and it's been hard to kind of hold back. I'm talking about it on Twitter and all that because there's a lot of people are saying a lot of things, and I wish them the best. But I'm like, I've been wanting to kind of vent about that whole thing, and this is what we got together for. But you know, we're kind of moving on past the Marvel thing. I mean, like I said, if Marvel looks weak in front of everyone else with the firings and the cancellations and all that stuff that's going on, you know, it kind of discourages people, you know, people like us, or people in the same you know, in the same neighborhood as we are as far as publishing comics go. It kind of makes it discouraging for us to do it, because if those guys can't make it, if they look like they're failing, then what chance do we have?
Right.
Yeah, well, that's always a tough thing to deal with.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, right now, I'm probably at my busiest right now, as busier than I've ever been, because I'm working on putting out a new webcomic series. I've got some stuff that I'm writing, and I've got a few things that I'm cooking up that I really don't want to talk about just yet. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of stuff coming up. And yeah. I'm looking at the way the marketplace is going as far as how it welcomes indie books. And granted, there have been a lot of like little success stories coming out, especially from Image, ever since Nick Spencer and Morning Glories and all the books that came since then. There's been a lot of books that have been succeeding, and it's ridiculous how, you know, and it's great that they're doing that. But how about the smaller guys like us? You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why I can't stress enough about. To me, the future of comics, as far as survival goes, is self-creation, especially, you know, with the Internet, especially with, the, you know, ebooks and PDFs and being able to read them on multi-formats and you know, not having to be, you know, trapped to just trying to print books and breaking your bank. Mm-hmm. You know, there are ways to get through it. And I just think we're about to hit this new renaissance, which actually has been going on for a few years. I mean, a lot of webcomic creators have a situation where they don't really have to deal with piracy too much, because like their stuff is coming out on like a weekly or bi-weekly or a daily basis. And then when a collection's available, they hit shows, they'll have stuff available in the stores. You find their stuff in Amazon, and then some of them do okay. You know, some of them have been able to turn this into a business. Now, with regular comics, it's a whole different game, because those are two separate things. Web comics and comics are, you know, two separate things, but they're within still the same field of art themselves. But, you know, we still have, you know, gentlemen like Kirkman, Robert Kirkman, who's done very well for himself. And, yeah, he's worked for Marvel, but his success comes from his stuff that's been out through Image. And, you know, I say it all the time. People know me. People who know me know I'm one of the biggest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fans in the world. That was a creator-owned comic book, which became one of the biggest franchises in Hollywood and in comics for the longest time. People always think that Wolverine was always the shit. No. Before Wolverine, there was the Turtles, there was Snake Eyes. All these other cats were way bigger before Wolverine. And then Wolverine became like the 800-pound gorilla for like the longest time and was in everybody's books along with Punisher. I ain't forgot about the 90s, y'all. I ain't forgot. But
I got no problem with the 90s. No.
I don't have a problem with it either. I just joke from like a Marvel aspect. I remember a lot of the 90s Marvel books, and they cracked me up when I look at them.
It was Ghost Rider, Punisher, and Wolverine in every book. And then they got so big, they got their own pair of one-shots where it's three of them.
Yeah.
Being all grim.
But the power of self-creation is a great thing, because it's one of those things where I know it's not just about the money, but Eastman and Laird were able to build so much because of that financially, and they were able to do other things too because of TMNT, and we can get that back. It's just that we have to find a way to either play the game as it is now or make our own rules and change the game our way. So it's just, but it's hard.
It's definitely hard. And if you think about it too, the Internet, as much as it's useful, it's also kind of, it kind of holds you back, because certain news sites are filled with articles about, you know, like on one day, actually over the last week, it's like there's nothing but articles about Marvel books or whatever. And then they're like, are they paying these guys? Because I think is that what we need to do next? Sometimes you just don't know.
Yeah, and so see, it's just PR is hard when you're a smaller publisher or indie publisher. PR is hard. There are ways to get your work, to get your stuff out there PR wise. But I know what you're saying, because you want. the comics beat to say something about you. You want Newsarama to actually put out your press release. You want the, you know, the Pulse or any other, or Bleeding Cool or whoever. You want those bigger name sites to talk about you, even if it's only one time every 3 months. You just want a little bit of attention to say, hey, if you just give me a little shine, I can, you know, this can open up so many doors. And it's hard. And it's hard because we have put ourselves in a situation where it, we, and we even say it every day, the big two. Mm-hmm. And you constantly, you say that enough, people believe it enough, and then people are like, oh, okay, it's just Marvel and DC. And that's what, that's been like instituted into our brains, even though we know that there's more than Marvel and DC, you know, and there's Image and there's Boom and there's IDW, who keeps coming up and up and up. And there are other publishers out there, but we still have this big two mentality because they are the biggest sellers of the bunch. But it can change. It can change. It's just that we have to find a way to, you know, get people, you know, to get, you know, to get people to read comics. I know people read comics. It's just that sometimes we get stuck in these number games, and like I try to tell people, you can't get all caught up in these direct market numbers because people, not everybody goes to a comic store to get a comic.
Exactly, and I mean it's despite the fact that, you know, it's difficult to kind of break through with, you know, being an indie person, you realize also you've got guys like Robert Kirkman, and like we talked about earlier, this guy was able to turn his little zombie comic into like one of the most anticipated TV shows on cable. In fact, it is probably the highest rated series on cable right now. And yes, it's amazing how that guy was able to take, you know, his work and do that. And if you look at how young Robert Kirkman is, he's the same age as I am. And I just see that, like, wow, what have I been doing with my life? Maybe I should have done the zombie comic.
Well, see, but because of him, you do have a lot of zombie comics out now.
Yeah.
At
varying stages of quality, unfortunately.
Yes.
But, I mean, besides that, I mean, there's more, you know, creator-owned books that are slowly making it out there. I mean, there's going to be they just did the pilot for Powers, you know, by Bendis and Oeming, and then there's talk of a Chew TV show, and there's all kinds of other stuff coming up,
yeah.
And it's making me hopeful that anyone, you know, anyone out there who wants to create their own thing, that's kind of something that encourages them to kind of push on. Despite all this gloom and doom in the between the bigger companies and their bullshit,
right? It makes me wonder on the Marvel end, because as we said before, Marvel's pretty much left to their own and Disney lets them be. Uh-huh. But I just really wonder if there's anybody that's like looking at this from like the Disney side of things, saying, okay, when do we step in? Or do they say, you know what, the numbers are still fine. As long as the numbers are fine, leave them alone. It makes me wonder, because I'm sure Disney's like, well, look, we've got, you know, we own all this stuff. So we've got all these IPs, you know, we've got the movie rights now, and, you know, we can make movies, we can make cartoons, we can do whatever. That's very profitable for us. And we make a good amount of coin from, you know, printing Disney comics overseas. Why should we really, really, really worry about Marvel comics? So I understand people's concerns, because I'm concerned too. Like I said, I love comic books. I never want to see people suffer and lose jobs, especially right now in this economy and this time. But as like I said, I say it again. If you can create your own, go create your own. And like I said, there's, you know, a lot of sacrifices to be made. I mean, you know this and I know this. We both have full-time jobs on top of creating comics.
Oh yeah. And then honestly, when you're making your own comics, you are your own boss. Everything points to you. It is all, you know, this is all you. It's all you, and it's you know, it, there's really, when you have that book at the end of the process, when you have that book in your hands, or the web comic, or whatever it is, whatever form you choose to make the comic, when you see it finished, there is no better feeling in the world than seeing that, because that thing that was in your head is now tangible, and it's now there for everyone to see.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and some of this stuff, I mean, if you were to, if you were working for Marvel or DC and you come up with this stuff and you use it on their books, the best you'll get is a royalty check whenever they use a character for something, or you know, if they go multimedia or whatever, the best you can get is a royalty check. Here you get to own these things. You can do whatever you want with them, and they're never going to be in a perpetual state of dying and getting resurrected or whatever, getting forced into some event, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and again, there's no slight to those, to the bigger publishers, but, you know, there's just, you know, for anyone who makes comics, I mean, a lot of people who work for these publishers actually do create their own books, you know? Like, you know, they put them out through Vertigo or through Icon or even through Image, and there's, you know, they realize also the importance of, you know, putting something new in the market that's not dependent on this other stuff, and parlaying whatever fame and fortune you get from these bigger publishers and putting it into your own work, and I think we might be seeing more of that. I mean, look up. I mean, I'm starting to think, you know, like a lot of, you know, all the news has been coming up, and then all of a sudden you think of Ed Brubaker taking his new book to Image.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you think.
Yeah,
and
it does.
And you know, and while the official reasoning as to why he's doing that has been made clear, and that it's, you know, it's because he had made a promise to Robert Kirkman about doing a book with them eventually. But you start to wonder, because of what's been going on, you know, why this is going on, why they moved. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Go ahead and say what did you want to say.
No, it's like you said when we had our like Twitter you know, message conversation. You know, it's okay, you know, to play both sides. Uh-huh. You can create your own stuff, and you can also do the projects that you hope to love at a bigger publisher.
Uh-huh.
But look out for yourself. That's what it really comes down to. Yeah, you gotta look out for yourself.
Yeah, don't put all your eggs in the same in the one basket, basically.
Right, you know, because the days of like the Kirby era, where, you know, DC just let Kirby run free and he created all this stuff. It didn't matter if it stuck to the wall or not. DC still cutting a check for anything. And then, you know, Dark Side gets used, you know, animation wise or print or whatever. Warner Brothers will write that check, or DC Entertainment will write that check, Kirby family gets it. Mm-hmm. Marvel side, it's a little different. Not going to get into that. but at least, you know, but DC will write that check. But the thing is that I don't think you'll ever get that type of creativity for a big publisher ever again, because it's the whole key of ownership.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, I think that's another reason why. That's another reason why you don't see as many new characters created for bigger publishers now, for Marvel and DC. You know, it's pretty far and few between. Yeah, there are some new characters that get created, but they're so low key. You don't ever have to worry about like Jackpot getting a, you know, getting like a series and a TV show and a movie and everything. Somebody saying, "Damn it, I own the rights to that." You're not going to see that. You know, like if a new character gets created, it's real low key, because you have thousands upon thousands of characters that have been created over the decades in the Marvel Universe. Same for the DC Universe. So it's like, why should I create new stuff? And I'm talking about from their standpoint. They're like, why should anybody have to create new stuff when we got all these characters? We can tell stories to these characters, mm-hmm. and that's more money for us. You know, and that's from a corporate standpoint. So that's why, like, I'm real big about creator owned, and people know me. I love licensed property books. You know, like stuff that IDW is doing with Ghostbusters right now makes me happy. They finally got a good artist on it. And, you know, like, I love G.I. Joe. I love Turtles. I love all that stuff, too. But people forget, Turtles wasn't a corporate-owned thing for the longest time. It wasn't until it was sold to Nickelodeon that it became a corporate thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it was still a Laird thing, but, you know, Peter Laird thing before it was sold to Nick.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, but that's the whole thing. And just create. There's nothing wrong with creator-owned comics, and there's always something for everybody. It's not just and you know this. It's not just capes. It's not just capes and tights. It could be anything.
If you do a creator-owned comic, you don't have to worry about someone canceling it. But, you know, after they turn it into an ongoing by issue 8, because you know, you're in control. It's yours, and you. It all falls on you to make that book as good as possible. Put all your hard work, put all your effort, all your love into the book, because it's yours. And who knows, maybe one of these days that comic will be the one will be feeding you and your family.
Right.
Just, you know, if you put the amount of passion and effort into creating your own comic in the same way that you're arguing about like using a character for your crossover event in a big company. You know, who knows? Who knows what you'll get out of it? But yeah, it really is a tough market to break into, and social media has been very useful, at least in kind of getting the word out.
Yes.
And, you know, you just have to have the right amount of followers or the right people following you, and who knows, it could spawn success. I mean, there's more people doing their promotions through Twitter now than they are on message boards like they used to, for example, or even on Facebook. So it's encouraging, and of course, the instant feedback that you get is also very, very useful when it comes to promoting your stuff and doing your own thing. You have been really good with that, actually. So, oh, go on.
Oh, no, go ahead. Please continue. No. Continue.
You've been really good with it. You know how to push your stuff out there, and at the same time, you don't oversaturate it.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike you know, again, bigger entities are not like that. You don't flood my feed with all kinds of nonsense. Right.
Oh, yeah. You know, you got to see, it's one of those things, like, it's just out of respect to other people. I know that if like a person that has way more clout than I do, you know, like basically Twitter bombed or Facebook bombed, you know, everybody with messages every 10, 15 minutes, you know, buy my book. I would get annoyed by that. So why would I put that on anybody else? So you try to pace yourself. And like, and that's what I do. Like, say, for instance, if Action Lab drops something on Twitter, I will retweet it, you know, one time. Mm-hmm. And then if other people, you know, retweet it, great. Mm-hmm. But after that, it's done, you know, and like, I'll come back. I might remind you on something later on. But the goal is to inform and not annoy. And you slowly build that following and gathering. And you hope that they stay and stick around. And, you know, I can't be that asshole. I can't be that guy that annoys the piss out of everybody because, like, you know, I come from, you know, I'm an Air Force brat. Uh-huh. And, like, you know, I've got that way thing about structure and rule and form. Uh-huh. And it's just like, if you want to be respected, you got to treat people with respect. And you have to make them feel that you care about them as much as they hopefully care about you. You know, regardless of whether you sell one book or 1 million books. And so, you know, I just, when I put a message out there, you know, I'm being sincere about it. You know, if I say, hey, you need to go peep this book, I'm being honest about it. I'm not just saying that to fill a number. Because, like I said, the days of, you know, trying to sell a smaller publisher like us selling like 6 grand, 8 grand, or 10 grand worth, and I'm talking about just number-wise copies of books, is real hard. You know what I mean? It's damn hard right now. And so I'm just trying to sincerely, and I've always been this way, I just sincerely say what we're trying to do, whether it's a book that I've wrote or helped create, or whether it's a book that, you know, Action Lab has published, you know, or like, you know, even my podcast, it's like, yo, I'll let you know a couple of times, but I'm not going to annoy the piss out of you, because if I lose you, then I'll lose somebody else. And then the snowball becomes an avalanche.
It just goes from there. I mean, I know of some indie creators who are really, who really need to learn to moderate themselves better.
Yeah.
You know, online, in the way they carry themselves, because, you know, while they may put out a good product, you just worry that, you know what, they're just going to annoy people so much that people don't even bother, and they'll never look at anything that guy puts out ever again.
Yeah, so you really got to balance it out. You really honestly do. And for some people, it's hard. And also, sometimes you got to go away for a while. And this not only goes for comics, but it goes for like, you know, bigger people like entertainers and whatnot. Sometimes you got to go away for a while. Like, I was sick in September, and there's like a good period about 2 weeks where I wasn't really on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I came back and said, hey, you know, under the weather, I'll be back soon. Bye. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it was healthy for me because I wasn't really feeling good because I worked myself to death. Uh-huh. And I needed to pull myself away from the computer for a while anyway. And it kind of put a new perspective on, like, you know, personal health, mental health, uh-huh, and things like that. But then I came back, and now, you know, I do my thing again. I get to talk with people on Twitter, and then I get to, you know, share some stuff, whatever. But you got to balance it out. And it's the same with, like, folks in Hollywood. Uh-huh. You know, sometimes, like, Hollywood cats even need to understand, sometimes you got to go away. Will Smith understood this. He said, fuck it. I'm not going to be in any movies for a while. I'm going to give you my son. I'm going to give you my daughter. I'm going to let them make money. And, you know, y'all going to see I got one of the most talented families in the world. Yes, Hawthorne is a terrible TV show, but I would never tell my wife that. You know, stuff like that. And, but, you know, he went away. And now, you know, the Will Smith storm will come back next year. But he went away. See, and that's what, like, cats like Jennifer Lopez never learned. And you think if she'd have stuck around, all the stuff she stole from Puffy as far as how to market yourself and how to, you know, do like entertainment business, because I know a lot of people dog Puff, but she learned a lot from Puff. Like when she hit her peak, it was, you know, it was like, cool, whatever. And then she oversaturated herself, but she never wanted to go away. And, you know, and it killed her record sales. She couldn't sell a record because, you know, she's not the greatest singer in the world. She's an entertainer. But she never knew how to go away. And then she got that American Idol job and she blew back up again. But still, she had never went away. And now she's annoying to many. She's annoying again. Even with this whole divorce thing, she's annoying because you got to balance it out. Sometimes you got to go away and then come back and everything's cool. But it's a difficult thing. It's a difficult thing to balance. I didn't mean to take us on a tangent. I just
No. It makes so much sense. I mean, it everything relates to each other. I mean, between what we were talking about earlier, you know, with the Marvel thing, and even being micromanaged. I mean, sometimes people just need to scale back and let things go, let things run, and then all the way to self promotion and just publishing your own stuff. Everything kind of ties together. You know, it's just the way you handle yourself. And how you market yourself, and how you and what you create. I mean, if you keep publishing the same events, the same cycle of events over and over again, it's going to lose what made those things special to begin with. And,
yes.
And people will not care. People will not buy it. And sales go down. And you know, much like, you know, if you promote like crazy and nobody, and to the point where people can't stand you, nobody's going to buy your stuff. Again, you lose. I mean. I think the main lesson here is, like, you know, if you're trying to do stuff, especially in this business where everything's, you know, right now everything's kind of down, and when we're kind of looking at an upswing because of what DC's done, but, you know, you need to handle everything in moderation, you know. Yeah. You need to stand back sometimes and just let things happen, let people tell their stories in their books. Let them do their own thing, and you know, eventually it'll reward you. I mean, more, you know, it could be more readers, it could be at least high acclaim, or you know, whatever. If you hold back for a bit and let people do their thing, eventually it works out. And if there's one thing we can learn from this, you know, from all of this that we've been talking about, is you don't force yourself onto anyone. You know, whether you're a corporate person working for a big publisher or a creator trying to gain fans, you don't force yourself on people, because if you do that, you just lose.
Yeah.
At any rate, Sean, it was good talking to you. Where can people find you online?
Yeah, I can be found online on Twitter. I'm at PKD Media. Uh-huh. Also, there's a PKD Media page on Facebook for the company that I run, that I help run, Action Lab Entertainment. Action Lab has its own Facebook page. Action Lab also has its own Twitter page at Action Lab. Uh-huh. And if you want to know more about Action Lab Entertainment and all the comics we have, you can go to actionlabcomics.com for that. And I am in the midst of rebuilding the PKD Media website.
The empire.
Well, no, it'd be empire if it made some money, but no, it's in the process of being rebuilt, because PKD Media is being turned into a studio, whereas PKD Media used to be, you know, it's like my little self-publishing hub, and I try to publish comics. I just came to that realization. Look, I love Action Lab a lot, and it's been a great. It's not only been like a training thing, but it's also, I've also learned a lot in like the year and a half I've been working with Action Lab, and it just made me realize that I still want to create comics. I'm going to do things a little differently, and I still like, you know, podcasting and do other forms of entertainment. So I figured, let's just take PKD Media, let's make that a studio, and then that way I'm still doing things with other people. But, you know, they might be published through other publishers, or they might be produced through different venues. So, you know, I'm just trying to make it all work out, balance my life, and, you know, and breathe easy. So yeah.
And, of course, I can be found in my usual spots. Go to about.me/PatLoika, or follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/PatLoika. You you'll get everything you want out of me through there. And first, I kind of want to apologize for the somewhat negative tone of the episode earlier, because I don't really like to talk negative about stuff, but I thought this was this subject was very touchy to me, and I think maybe it really got I thought in my mind anyway, I thought it went more to me now, because I met some of these guys just last week in New York.
Yes,
like I met Alejandro. You know, Matt Fraction introduced him to me on at the con, and I have such respect for that dude and his work. And then just see this all happen just really pissed me off. So again, I apologize. Next week's episode is me talking with Kevin Mellon, and we talk about his Lovestruck graphic novel, his career, and we talk about his upcoming book Heart with writer. Blair Butler, which is a phenomenal book. So until then, you guys take it easy and do yourselves a favor and check out some of what Sean's been talking about as far as his work, because there's some fun stuff there. And Sean, you know, thanks again for coming on board. I hope we get to do this again.
Yeah.
And talk about something we're excited about, something a bit more happier. Like, you know, maybe we can talk about some G.I. Joe and Mask or something like that. Because
that's the magic word, man. What you talking about? Yeah, that's the magic word. You know they're bringing back, Hasbro's bringing back Mask, right?
Yeah. I mean, they kind of teased it. I mean, remember the G.I. Joe 25th anniversary line? They put a Matt Tractor figure in there?
Yes.
And then, actually, when I went to Dragon Con last September, I saw a Miles Mayhem cosplayer, which was awesome.
Oh, that is dope.
I will show you a picture. It's pretty badass, dude.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again. And once again, guys, we'll see you next week. Y'all take it easy.
Head it off.
Pulsate the lip function. The junction get rushed by some grimy people busting weed. Splatter your melon like some Attica felons. Using fire on good blood skull for heart swelling. Insert the spasm. Yes, the dirty herb has them. Thoroughbred thugs insert the phantasm. Verbal smarts spark the word. Vision my scripture. Exotic wine holding nine. Picasso pictures. When the rhyme pivot, you now limit your chance. Bodyguard the lyric with unlimited stance. Word seen the zing on bound to Beijing. When we touch down, you crown renowned kings.
There's no honor among speed, street pharmaceuticals stacked like Genovese. The four devils, 10 madmen, but not these. We profound, hardcore sound to MCs. Thumbs down, prepare, killer bees, it be warfare. This the year, niggas gotta take you off of here. Hold the square, if we go there, we go gritty. And spread fear through this rap city. Call the mayor, my razor sharp darts be like cold stayers. The smell of fear make my nostrils on. You've been warned, PLO from here to Lebanon. How many bombs must be dropped in the 90 now? Walk a mile in my shoes, get the street new. From at the cow.
It's common sense how I master my circumference. You dance, I get locked the fuck up, at least to my own reconnaissance. Can't be judged. Young bloods bust flat like scuds. Wu-Tang hovers 1,000 nudges above MC level. Yo, I stay high like treble. Foes who oppose get plucked like rose petals. Arrested and holding, penetrate forbidden regions. Whack MCs only lasting one season. The morale was low at the corral. Added to the pronouns, had no style. The weak proposed out ain't the official. Initial is ruler zigzag, zigzag, or the other portion ain't permissible. Tangible increase of the Wu-Tang manual. Handles to keep all this true hip-hop shit tangible and legible. Every egg ain't edible. My tracks remain unforgettable. Like Onat Cole, got to catch this paper. The box of Quasia, Glacier, Melchizedek, a skyscraper. Understand that the continents of Africa and Asia and free the black man from the slave labor.
Wu-Tang. The weight of the fam is on our back and we can't fall victim to this long haul of fame meaning nothing. We came to punish the glutton with a substance that can't be contained. Wu-Tang, motherfuckers, we be seeing y'all asses when we walk up in the club. Y'all all in the back, scared to speak, but speak cause you scared. Punk motherfuckers, we know what time it is.
All you been seeing is upsets in the box and shit, right? It's like, come on, man. This nigga fucked up motherfucking Whitaker.
He caught with him.
Mike got charged.
He might got touched, bro.
Holyfield.
And Mike don't fought for this fight. He fighting me, though.
You ain't fighting?
What are you talking about? What he did?
giving birth to it. Einstein birthed the hit, now nurture it. MGM front row seat tonight, no gents. Purify cleanse, ran into some beef up in the men's. Fiction short off, Wu-Tang tore me off the cross. All you saw was white meat, skin hanging off. These is words from the Archbishop. Some call it six up, the Betty Crocker, marble cakes, fixing with some wax janitor. Black Jack Mulligan from Canada, slam dance, tarantula style. Use a fan of the Monopoly King, sloppy poetry, Carnegie Hall's off the hook. Let's push through the armory, mad truck hitting solo with soul controllers. Behold, other thousand teeth fit swift and boneless.
You know, because Wu-Tang is invincible, you know what I mean? It's Wu-Tang forever, dog. That's it. You gonna get down with that W? That's that Wu. That's that wisdom, you know what I'm saying? That's the wisdom of the universe. That's the truth, the law, for the nation, of the gods. You know what I'm saying? We playing that through these days, God. You know what I'm saying? We got the fucking way. We got the medicine for your sickness out here, you know what I mean? I was telling Shorty, like, yo, Shorty, you don't even got to go to summer school. Pick up the Wu-Tang Devil CD. You don't get all the education you need this year, you know what I mean? Wu-Tang forever, God. Niggas can't fuck with these lyrics, God. You know what I mean?
Yo. Hell no. None of this shit, man.
Beats, lyrics, man.
Y'all
niggas
can't even understand half of this shit.
Nah, man, no. I think niggas been gonna figure it out to the year 2G.
Wax niggas ass for free or fee.
What? Yo, you know what? The next Wu-Tang album ain't even coming out until 2000. You know what I mean? That's just gonna come back with a comet. We're gonna bring a comet.
New millennium.
You know what I mean? So, yo, y'all niggas, man.
Be the resurrection.
God's is here, man. God is here.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests and those providing comments are theirs alone and do not necessarily reflect the views of Pat Loika. You can reach Pat by sending an email to loikamania@gmail.com. This has been a Dial R Studios production.